This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller. Welcome to this Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen. We're waiting on a pickup here from William Binney, Bill Binney, and we've got Harley Schlanger online. Hello, Harley.
Hi, John. How are you?
Fair to Midland, mostly good, and a summer rainstorm down here in Central Texas. We have not been able to get a hold of Bill.
Well, as I said, he sent a confirmation to me, so hopefully just keep trying.
Okay. I know I'm a busy guy. You and I were talking before the program today, and one of the questions I want to ask Bill, and this seems to be a point of consternation for a lot of people, if there is somebody within the NSA or the CIA or one of these other federal agencies that they have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And evidently, Mr. Binney ran afoul of the powers that be in Washington, D.C., and they did an armed raid. It's the usual kick the door in, weapons drawn, expletives being said, and, you know, you're under siege. And from what I understand, Harley, that was from, him talking. They didn't exactly like the idea that he was out there talking about surveillance or any other subject that they might consider to be sensitive.
Yeah. Well, he actually exposed the fraudulent approach of the NSA with their metadata collection, which he said had they spent less money and gone with the program he developed, they would have possibly headed off the 9/11 attacks. And in the meantime, what they were concerned about was bigger and more intrusive surveillance and, of course, more money to consultants, more money to technical firms. And Bill was one of the people who blew the whistle on that.
Well, and what you're talking about here is the trailblazer what the government went with. This is how they're scooping up all the data. And he came out, after the NSA, he went into business and with some friends, and he created Thin Thread. And that was shelved, much cheaper, much more effective, and it, I think, protected the American people from unwarranted surveillance. And evidently, the government didn't like that idea, so they decided to go with Trailblazer, spent more money, and they were able to scoop all the data that's out there that's scoopable, I guess you could say.
Well, scoopable, but not necessarily decipherable.
Yeah.
And the problem is the idea that bigger is better doesn't always fit, especially when it comes to counterintelligence.
Well, and it's a strange world that we live in now. You and I were speaking before the program, and, you know, the question is asked, you know, who's in charge at the White House? Is it Donald Trump? Is it Pompeo? Is it, you know, who's in charge here? Is it Bolton? And there seems...
Well, this is...
Yeah.
This is the question that foreign leaders are asking now, especially after the situation this last weekend with Iran. And it's not that foreign leaders are upset that Trump called off the raid or the attack. What they're worried about is how was this decided upon in the first place? Because as you know, the president has promised to scale back U.S. Involvement in the Middle East. He's called on withdrawal of troops completely from Syria, starting to bring them back from Afghanistan. And now we just sent 1,000 more into the region, supposedly to counter Iranian threats. We have this Gulf of Tonkin-type incident in the Gulf of Oman, you know, a reference back to the false flag that was used to justify U.S. intervention in Vietnam under Lyndon Johnson. And then you have the drone being shot down, which I think most people are now have come around to realize that it was shot down over Iranian airspace. So while it's good that the president pulled back, the question is, why were we 10 minutes away from a possible escalation of war that could lead to confrontation between the United States and Russia or the United States and China?
Well, and it's rather fascinating. The government has sidestepped responsibility for arming ISIS, training them, giving them all sorts of financial backing to destabilize the Syrian government and to topple it. Trump the other day, three, 4 days ago, I heard him say that, hey, you know, we kicked the enemy's butt in Syria and, you know, pretty much it's now on to Iran. Well, we all know the history of Iran. We know the coup that happened in 1979. We understand why the Ayatollah Khomeini came into power, what, some 8-10 years later. He was a hardliner. This Pavli guy was somebody that the U.S. could manipulate, and they wanted to do a little business, so they got the oil situation straightened around over there. But it's not who the people of Iran that you want to talk about election meddling. This is not the person that they wanted. So here we go back to 1979, and before that, the British were in there, we're in there, and we're pointing fingers at Iran like they're the bad guys. They're the ones that have been at the business end, if you will, of the rifle pointed at their head for all of these years.
Well, and also, as you pointed out, if you look at the situation with Syria, who is the enemy there? It was the Sunni Muslims, funded by the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates, that were Al-Qaeda and then ISIS. Who's their leading enemy in the region? It's Iran. But you have Pompeo and Bolton, who insist that Iran is responsible for the terror threat in the Middle East. Now, Iran was fighting on the same side we supposedly were against ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And the Iranians worked together with the Russians. And they played the leading role in forcing the destruction of the ISIS caliphate. The U.S. did play a role in terms of arming the Kurds and training them, but that was in coordination with the Russians. And so here we have a situation where we're turning on an ally based on alleged intelligence reports that were produced by someone in the government. When Pompeo said, we have evidence of Iranian threats to American interests, he said it was a government assessment, not an intelligence assessment. And some of the friends of Bill Binney are asking the question of, well, which government assessment, who produced this government assessment? Did it come from the State Department? Look at how bad the State Department has been under Pompeo in figuring out what's going on. So this question of a dual power situation in the White House, you know, is Bolton making policy? Is Pompeo making policy? Or is it Trump? And I think Trump's explanation that, well, he wants all sides, the doves and the hawks, and then he'll make the decision, I think that's kind of, first of all, it's dangerous because it leads to uncertainty from our allies and potential partners as to whether or not you can trust what Trump tells you or what Pompeo tells you. So it's a very dangerous situation.
It is, and for the life of me, picking John Bolton or Pompeo, people are scratching their head. And this is what's causing a lot of doubt, Harley. with the American people and those that are in the know versus those that are not. If you say John Bolton to those outside of the uneducated circle, they go, okay, yeah, so what? Well, Mike Pompeo, you know, head of the CIA, so what? They don't know. But the people that have been watching the federal politicians for a long time and can smell a rat when they see one have been looking at this and then doubting the veracity and legitimacy of Donald Trump.
Well, Trump confirmed that he and Bolton were at odds on Iran in some statements that appeared in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Mm-hmm. What he said was, if it were up to Bolton, we'd be at war with everyone in the world. And he went on to say that Bolton is a hawk. He was wrong on Iraq back in 2002, 2003. So the question then is, so what purpose does he serve in your administration? And all I can think is that somebody must have convinced Trump that Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, about Abraham Lincoln, about Lincoln supposedly having differing viewpoints so that he could come up with better solutions, that someone must have told Trump that's the model that should be used. But a number of historians have poked holes in the Doris Kearns Goodwin theory. And I think, yeah, it's you want a president who has a set of principles that he's going to stick to. And, you know, if he wants to find out what other people are thinking, fine. But you don't have to put them in your cabinet or in your administration in policymaking or policy-deciding positions.
Well, and I'm starting to wonder if Trump's ego is telling him that, well, I understand that some of these people, ergo Jeff Sessions, this guy was out there campaigning for Donald Trump. Everything is hunky-dory. And when he became the Department of Justice, he said to Trump that I'm going to recuse myself from this. Here's the top cop, if you will, in the land. This is a setup, as we all now know, and I'm sure that the rumblings are the inner circles in Washington, D.C. It must have been rumored at the time that, they're going to try to unseat Trump, that this guy at the DOJ decides to recuse himself and step back from the whole thing and allow these people to have at it at him.
The whole experience we've had with Trump raises one of the questions that people raise when they say, can we afford to have someone who's not an insider, someone who's not part of the system, someone who's not doesn't know the personnel? You know, I don't think that's true, that you have to have that. But that's one of the explanations that people give, that he just didn't know who to call on. Now, if he's relying on the judgment of people like Sheldon Adelson, one of the largest funders of his campaign and one of the closest allies to Bibi Netanyahu in the United States, if that's where the Kushner plan is coming from for Mideast peace, if that's where the anti-Iran policy comes from, that's a disaster. Now, on the Iran situation, I think part of Trump's approach to it is that he's trying to negate everything that was done by Obama. And he couldn't do it with Obamacare, but he could do it with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a good thing to get rid of. But secondly, he's trying to do it with the Iran agreement that Obama worked with five other nations to accomplish. And I've got Bill calling me. Let me see what this is.
Very good. That's what I was just going to suggest. He's on hold. He is online. Okay. Alrighty. And we're just waiting for the hookups to take place here, ladies and gentlemen. Stand by. This is live radio. I saw a video yesterday I had posted up. Lindsey Graham says Israel will attack Iran and the U.S. will follow. I'm rather amazed by that. And who is the effeminate one there? Mr. Graham. I know his soulmate, McCain, is now dead. And I think he thinks that he's got to pick.
John?
Yes, go ahead.
So try Bill now. He's on the line.
Okay.
Try him via Skype.
We're trying him right now.
Okay.
And do we have him? There we go. Oh, it's video. I get to look at him. All righty. Okay. Just go ahead and connect me. He's busy. He's leaving? Oh, he's not ready. I don't know exactly what that means. Oh, he'll be ready soon. Okay. You'll let me know. And these are the kind of things that live radio, they absolutely hate. But we are connected with him. And he said he will be right back. So,
okay.
We wait. All righty. Well, there seems to be a lot of time being wasted here, Harley. And I'm rather fascinated. We've got a lot of pressing issues that need to be taken care of. And we're still tied up 20 years on, almost 20 years, in the Middle East.
Yeah,
this has been the longest military campaign that the United States has ever been involved in, and we are still there. Okay, he's back. All right, do we have him now? Okay. All right. Mr. Binney, are you there, sir? Okay. Mr. Binney, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Ah, glad you could make it. I've got Harley Schlanger online with us. I just want to let people know, if they weren't aware of who you are and where you've been, you are whistleblowing. Your background is in the NSA, and you retired in October of 2001 after more than 30 years of the agency. And evidently, the powers that be don't like ex-employees out there walking and talking, hence I'm sure that's probably why you got your door busted in and guns pointed at you while you were in the shower. First out of the box, people inquiring minds want to know, don't you guys that work for the NSA or CIA or various agencies of the U.S. government, don't you have to sign non-disclosure agreements?
Yep. Yes, we do.
And
however, that doesn't cover government committing crimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that does not cover that. Sorry.
Okay.
Executive Order 13526, Section 1.7 says that any evidence of a crime cannot be classified, and you know, you just simply anything that is a criminal act or corruption, fraud, waste, abuse, they cannot cover it with classification.
Well, let's not.
They don't like that to be known, by the way.
Can we tell Ed Snowden that, or does he already know?
I've been making that point. I don't know if he knows or not, but I've been making that point for quite some time, because a lot of what he exposed is evidence of a crime by our government.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least the extradition for the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, that's been set for February. So I guess that gives him about 7 months to work on him. I do believe, Mr. Binney, that it would be not to the advantage of the government, U.S. government, to bring this guy over here, extradite him, get him in a courtroom, because what this guy could bring forth as witnesses would be a little bit more than any federal prosecutors or federal judge could handle.
If they let him do that.
If. They
you
let
know,
him
they,
do it.
They don't have to do that. Now, in the case of John Kiriakou and also Chelsea Manning, they went behind closed doors with the judge and held the trial and came out and gave him the verdict.
Okay. Jury,
because they claimed it was classified, you know, sensitive national security, and so you couldn't have an open discussion of it.
Well, I think it's the curtain that they're afraid of being pulled back. Everything's thrown under the blanket of national security anymore.
Yep, that's right. That's what they're doing.
Up to and including, as I like to call it, snooping and pooping on the American public. Go ahead and skip that break. Just kill the break. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Your involvement with the NSA, you were in there for about 30 years. You came out. You had a program. The government was going to use a program called Trailblazer. And you were not exactly saying that, no, the United States government should not collect intelligence. That's what they do. But what you've said is that they shouldn't be collecting it carte blanche on the American people. Why did they turn down your thin thread, which was cheaper and a lot faster?
Well, I mean, because it also would expose all the crimes they were committing, too. Mm-hmm. Once it got into the data, it could see that also, and they didn't want that to happen. They also wanted to spend, for example, the first 5 year request for a budget for the Trailblazer program would cost 1,000 times what it did for us to develop and implement and deploy thin thread.
Hello?
Yeah, hello? Yeah. I mean, that didn't include, actually deploying it and implementing it.
Yeah.
That only included development.
Well, you were involved with Kirk Wybie with that.
Yeah.
And you started a company called Pretty Good Knowledge. Yep. And this must have, I'm assuming here, Bill, that the government is watching you.
Yep.
So what was your first indication that you saw that you might have been chafing the federal government the wrong way?
Well, that was pretty clear when I was inside NSA, because we had heard from the congressional staff that the companies that were around NSA, seeking contracts from NSA, were in the committees in Congress lobbying to get our program canceled. So we knew, it was all about the money. They needed to get us out of the road. I mean, after all, we solved the problem of volume, velocity, and variety. And that was the problem they were asking to get the initially $3.8 billion for, to do the development in the Trailblazer program. So if they let everybody know that we'd already solved the problem, they don't have the problem to get the money. So Congress would give them the money. So that's why the companies needed to get into the committees and get us canceled. That's what they were doing. And so they came into to get all of the money from the government, and they bamboozled them and got the money, and we got the boot. And in the process, what that meant was they traded basically the security of the people of the United States and the free world for money. And that's why a lot of people have been killed since then, and they're still being killed, because they aren't doing anything smart about it.
Well, there's a million and one questions I want to ask you. But let's jump to the Russian coup that supposedly was
the one we were perpetrating on them.
A clarification on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and from my understanding, that it was somebody with a zip drive that downloaded the information and sent it over to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. He did not hack into anything. That's not what he did. He accepted all information and posted it, and I do believe Julian Assange did exactly that. And there was a guy by the name of Seth Rich that ended up with, what, 3 bullet holes in his back over a robbery, and he didn't steal anything. The word has it that that's exactly where that thumb drive and that information came from. Not that he was any crusader against the Democratic National Committee, but he saw wrongs and he sought to expose it, sent the thumb drive to WikiLeaks, and we've got a body that nobody's followed up on the murder of Seth Rich. Any truth to that?
Well, there certainly is, sufficient evidence to certainly investigate that. I mean, it was Kim.com that came out recently that said he assisted Seth Rich in getting data to WikiLeaks. So, I mean, that's certainly some testimony. Also, Ty Clevenger, a lawyer, subpoenaed or did a FOIA to NSA on any communications they had on one end was Seth Rich and on the other was Julian Assange or Kim.com or other associates with WikiLeaks. And they came back to him and said, well, we've got 32 pages, 15 different documents, but you can't have them because it's classified, and so we can't give them. So, but that says they have something, So they need to, Attorney General Barr needs to look into all that.
Well, I did see the interview with Sean Hannity. He went over to the embassy over in London, sat down with Julian Assange. He kept pressing him. Where did this information come from? Where? And it was like it was not a question he was asking. It was like a question he was told to ask to narrow this thing down? Did it come from the United States? And Julian Assange declined, and he said, look, that's not what we do. The reason why we are so trusted is we do not reveal sources. We just simply put the information out there. And when Sean Hannity asked him, he said, well, did this come from the United States? He just smiled at him. And again, he reiterated, I'm sorry, I cannot tell you where this came from. So it seems that Julian Assange will not, and if he does hit a courtroom, as you suggested, it's not going to be an open forum, trial by the jury of your peers. So on, and they'll throw a blanket of secrecy over the thing. I am just absolutely flabbergasted that so many leaks, so much information is out there, but I'm not seeing anything, Bill, being acted on. Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton, if you want to talk about Benghazi, you want to talk about arms shipments going into Syria, who was actually in Syria trying to depose the Syrian government. We've seen this over and over again in the Middle East. But it's something, it's like the giant elephant sitting in the room drinking your beer and watching telly. It's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I should also point out that Julian Assange did something very different after Seth Rich's murder. He offered a $20,000 reward for any information leading to the capture of people who did that murder.
Seth Rich?
Yeah.
And nobody's come forth. I remember there was a Washington, D.C. cop that was on it, and they stepped on him pretty hard. They told him to drop the investigation.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, from a political stance here, let me delve into this, Donald Trump and trying to herd cats in Washington, D.C. First off, I got to ask you the question. In your opinion, Donald J. Trump, good guy, bad guy?
Actually, I think he's the only one that gives us any hope for our democracy or republic.
That's a mouthful because
I don't see anybody else there that's going to attempt to do anything that will restore our fundamental principles under the Constitution. He's the only one that's gives us any hope.
Bill, what scares the hell out of me that we're even discussing this subject and we're depending on one man to correct the ship of state. We're supposed to have a balance of power. We've got three branches of government, but that doesn't exactly cover the President of the United States and his obligation to follow the Constitution in this republic.
They all take that oath, by the way, to protect and defend the Constitution.
Well, somebody's falling down on the job.
Yes, they certainly are. In fact, they're all accessories to crimes by voting for legislation that perpetuates these violations of our constitutional rights.
Yeah, the best offense is a good defense, or you could flip that. The best defense would be for Donald Trump to go on the offense and open up this investigation, like he said during his campaign for the 2016 presidency, to go after Hillary Clinton, to get into... did you notice that as soon as she lost the election, she shut down her foundation, locked it down? Scrubbed all these emails, destroyed servers, yep. On it goes.
HBIT and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Arkansas, her and Bill Clinton, for God's sakes, there's enough to put these two in jail for the next 300 years, but nobody can seem to be able to touch them.
Well, you know, when you have corrupt people inside the Department of Justice and the FBI and the CIA and NSA... that are going to protect people like that, then they don't have anything to worry about.
Are you in reference to the two guys who were actually voting communists back in the 70s?
and many, many more, not just them.
Well, this should be sounding... What is the problem? Is in Washington, D.C., is everybody compromised? Are people afraid to speak because of loss of job or loss of limb? Or being blackmailed? What do you think is the problem why good men, and this was a typing exercise, Bill, I don't know if you remember in high school, is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. Do we have anybody with a spine and a voice in Washington, D.C.?
Well, as you can tell, we have very few.
You're one of them.
Yeah. Well, I'm willing to help anybody down in there who really wants to do the right thing. But you know, I can't see. I mean, I think Barr wants to do the right thing. I'm getting the sense that he does. So let's just see what he starts executing. If he starts referring people to grand juries for indictments, then you'll know he's doing the right thing. If he doesn't do that, he's been bought into by the criminal mob down there.
Now, Bill, I don't know if you've thought this process out post if they get their way, the deep state, whether Donald Trump gets another cycle in 2020. But if this is not stopped politically in this country is staunchly divided.
Yeah, it's about... and we're also watching the demise of democracy here and around the world, because this has been infected around the world. It's not just here. We infected other countries, the UK, Germany, Japan, all of them. You know, they're all following our lead.
And where exactly are we leading them? I can't see
the
path.
Down the drain. Down the drain. Yeah. Down a totalitarian drain.
Well, and Bill, you know where this... you probably don't know anything about me, but back in the 90s when Billy Boy and the woman from Florida, the Attorney General, Janet Reno, they were making noises like they were going to come after the guns. Well, yeah. We saw that. We read the law.
Yeah.
We read the law. There is the organized militia and unorganized militia. Well, we took the unorganized route, and we literally built an army in this country that was ready to go to drop of the hat. Now, I'm not saying that that is disbanded, but that's been turned down to a slow simmer. But again, that could be turned back up to a boiling heat. I myself don't want to go against the assets of the United States government because, well, you'd have life expectancy of a housefly. But having said that, there are good men that have stepped forth before and will again. Is that the only way we can get this country back?
No, I think, you know, we still have some hope with the current president, President Trump, and perhaps the current attorney general. We have to see. But if those two take the lead and start breaking the ice and getting into these corrupt criminal activities that have been going on, and they start issuing indictments, then I'd say we're on the right track.
You know, John, if I may say something here, I think the important thing that Bill's getting at is that because Trump has fought, because he didn't surrender, he didn't submit to blackmail from Comey, the J. Edgar Hoover type blackmail, he didn't submit to Brennan and others, that because of that, the story has come out, not just of the overall corruption behind Russiagate, but of the fraud of the Mueller report. Yeah. One of the things Bill has done is taken the lead in exposing the biggest lie, which is still left in the report, that of the Russian hacking. Because if that's exposed, and Bill will have a chance to, I think, present that in the Roger Stone trial. If that's exposed and cast aside, then it makes the whole point that this whole exercise in Russiagate was designed to prevent Trump from breaking out of the old paradigm of geopolitical confrontation with Russia and China, and that the intention of the Russiagate was a coup against him because he was unwilling to stick with the old policies.
At a minimum, I think they wanted to keep him so busy and distracted from being able to do anything, you know, for these through these different investigations and subpoenas and so on, just to keep him so preoccupied with the business they were manufacturing that he couldn't actually do anything positive for the country.
Well, that seems like a pretty sloppy game plan, seeing how he got the election in 2016. And it's been suggested to me, Bill and Harley, that the election of Donald Trump, well, that was just a, well, he's really an inside guy, and he's there to do the bidding for the deep state that he says he's against.
Yeah.
and I'm watching this guy very closely. People are getting a little bit aggravated that he's not having more victories. We've got problems on our border here. We've got problems in the Middle East. Economically, things in this country aren't as rosy as the White House and Wall Street has tried to make everybody believe. As a matter of fact, we might be teetering on the second banking crisis here very shortly. We have got a lot of problems. And to watch these Democrats even bring in the most extreme, like the AOCs, and now we're going to do reparations for gays and lesbians. I don't know what damage has been done to them, but politically we are in a mess. And Bill, you've viewed and you've seen the intelligence. You've been involved in a lot of different things on how countries are overthrown. CIA, well, the classic example, go in, start up a group opposing, arm them, train them, give the propaganda, bust the country out, and then reform it. It's called nation building. That's exactly what I see happening to this country right now.
Yeah, and, the thing that they try to do is create an external enemy to keep the public of the inside the country focused on something external as opposed to something internal. They try to distract them that way, too, and that's fundamentally also what they're doing.
Well, I can think of two characters, Pompeo and Bolton, right now, that seem to be fulfilling that.
Yes, they are.
And the question has been asked. The world leaders want to know, who are we talking to? Is this the President of the United States? Are we talking to a cabinet member, an underling? Who's exactly running the show in Washington, D.C.?
I've been afraid of the number of warmongers who have been focusing and getting close to the president.
Jared Kushner.
and a number of others too.
When I first saw Jared Kushner, I'm old school. I'm like you. I see things through a different prism, but. When I saw Jared Kushner don the yarmulke, go over to the Middle East, and start talking to Bibi Netanyahu about U.S. policy, I had to wonder what was going on, and which leads to a broader issue here. We've got coming up the 20th anniversary of all this war-making in the Middle East. Exactly what has been accomplished?
That's right. Yeah, nothing. And just going in and creating another war just makes more of a mess.
And I think Donald Trump's aware of that. I don't know that I buy that. He called it. It was called off in the last 10 minutes. I'm finding it hard to believe that people within his cabinet are keeping information from him, risking war in the Middle East.
See, that's the one thing I told Pompeo when I met with him when he was director of CIA. I said basically his organization and all the other agencies in the intelligence community. We're lying to him and the president. They're not telling you the truth, I said. You know, you're not getting the honest truth here. I mean, why else would the president tell you to talk to me to get facts about Russiagate? Why aren't you getting these facts from your agencies? You know?
Because it's not really the agency that serves the best interest of the American people, maybe?
Well, and also, you see, they have control of the information being fed to the president to make decisions. This is how they can manipulate him and how they can get him to do what they want done. And that's what that's why everything needs to be challenged by the president. He needs to tell him, okay, you need to support everything you're telling me with the basic facts, not your rationalization or anything, any words you're going to spew at me. I need to see the basic facts.
I have suggested that that Donald Trump, if he's having a problem with the media, MSNBC, it doesn't matter, ABC, NBC, doesn't matter which news organization. Fox is a little bit more pro-Trump, but they're anti, and they're on board with unseating this president. And when I see this, if you want to bypass him, you can tweet all day, running down the media that hates your guts and wants to see you unseated. But what I suggested was that, in fact, that he do what Franklin Delano Roosevelt used to do, only by radio. Remember those days, folks? That was television without pictures. That's right. Directly to the American people.
I remember the creaking door also.
Exactly. But he have his own fireside chat bypassing the media. Yeah. But by Donald Trump bypassing the media in this country by doing his own version of fireside chat. I would be feeling, if I was Donald Trump right now, I'd be feeling rather insecure. Are they that afraid? They missed it in 2016. They're going to try to rig the 2020 election. I can already see that. But you really want to, excuse the French here, do you really want to piss off the guy that's going to take the presidency, the reins of the presidency for the next 4 years?
I just think they feel they need to stop him any way they can. I mean, the Democrats are part of this, even though some of the Republicans are. So, I just don't think he doesn't have a, I mean, that's why he got attacked right after he won the election and started, before he, actually probably even before he started coming in to take over as president, I mean, people from both parties used to start shooting at him. You know, they were shooting all kinds of things at him at that time, just as if he was going to get resistance from all sides at that point. That's because he was not part of their game plan of being a career politician, if you will. Or I like to call them perpetual politicians in place.
Well, and my take on Donald Trump, and I was with Ron Paul for his two runs for the presidency in office that he never really wanted because they thought they would that he'd kill him. But I watched Donald Trump that was more of a Democrat than he was conservative, Republican, or whatever. He was a businessman, saw the ills of this country with the trade deficits, all of that. And I think what motivated the guy, it was his ego telling them that, hey, I'm a business guy. I can go to Washington and I can be of great help, at least restoring the economy, if not the position of the United States in the eyes of foreign nations. I'm looking at this guy and I'm going, yeah, he's got a can-do attitude, but every damn time he turns around, he's getting stabbed. And I'm watching this coming right out of his own cabinet.
I don't disagree with that at all.
But John, you know, the interesting thing then is that's why it's crucial to look at what he said he would do internationally. You mentioned the trade deals. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did immediately come out and junk the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was Hillary Clinton's gold standard of free trade agreements. But most importantly, he made clear from the beginning that he wanted a collaborative relationship with Putin, the president of Russia, and with President Xi of China. And when he sat down with Putin in Helsinki, he touched the third rail of this deep state operation when he said, why are we spending $750 billion a year on weapons, which could go into education, healthcare, transportation, infrastructure? And he and Putin discussed that. And part of their discussion was that they're both being misled, especially by U.S. intelligence. And look at how the media and Democrats and Republicans, remember Lindsey Graham and others, went after Trump, basically saying he was a traitor because he was saying he accepted what Putin said more than what he got from his own intelligence community.
I'm rather shocked. And Bill, we can see the counter-Trump stories out there that we've got to go after Iran. The latest story is Iran is poised to unleash hordes of Hezbollah terrorists on U.S. soil. It's the threat that they have used to continue these operations in the Middle East. And what I see at the very nexus of this is the wishes of Israel and their Greater Israel Project. The head of the ex-head of one of their intelligence agencies just came out. The story just hit the wires the other day that said, wait a minute, are you confused here? Israel's never wanted peace with the Palestinians. What we want is their land. And it doesn't stop there.
Yeah, and our military-industrial complex would like a nice, safe war all the time. Well, and wars in the Middle East for us are safe. At least we don't face massive numbers of nuclear weapons.
Well, and that's another issue. It's been said that Israel has up to 400 nuclear weapons of all sorts of delivery processes. And if I was Iran right now, I'd be extremely nervous about Israel and their ability to basically turn the entire Middle East into a big glass parking lot. They have so many nuclear weapons, so Iran wants to protect their own borders and their own country by having defensive weapons, but we're not going to allow them to do that. What I see is a strong hand of Israel and the Mossad guiding all of this stuff.
You know, I wouldn't, I certainly think they have a great deal of influence in it, yeah.
Well, why else would Bolton jump on a plane and go over there and have meetings with Bibi Netanyahu? And it's said that
warmongers get together, right?
What's that?
Warmongers get together.
Yeah, I mean, we keep hearing repeatedly, and I don't know how dumb these agencies or the deep state thinks the American people are, but when I see them carrying on the way they are, and they constantly refer to our national interest. and our friends in Israel. We're, the way I see this bill, we're fighting Israel's proxy by proxy. We're fighting the wars for them to destabilize, bring down governments, expand their land holdings, if you will. I don't see anything coming out of this that's any good, and they keep repeating it's in our nation's interest. Exactly what is our interest in the Middle East? What do they keep saying this for? What, as you see it, what is the United States, from the neocon point of view, what is our interest in the Middle East?
I think the interest is, again, getting back to the military-industrial complex, keep it going and keep it funded, and that means you have to have a continual war to keep everything moving and keep everything, all the need for more weapons and more, you know, more money into that community and keep it funded and going. I mean, if they don't have a war, we should cut their budget, you know? So, and that's the way they view it. So we have to have a threat and a war to keep going.
Well, much has been made out of, and when we talk about Eisenhower, it's his address to the nation before he left office. And warning the American people about the military-industrial complex, and what I find rather fascinating, that he was in on a lot of construction of this said military-industrial complex, and then he warns everybody when he leaves office. Kennedy comes in. I see some parallels between the position Kennedy found himself in and the position that Donald Trump finds himself in.
Yep. So well, when he walked in, you know, the Bay of Pigs was already planned and ready to execute. So,
and there was one Soviet officer on board a nuclear submarine that basically stopped World War III.
Yeah.
This is how close we came.
Very close. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Okay, let's switch gears here a little bit. Now, Bill, you and the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, you had actually penned a letter to Angela Merkel urging the Chancellor to be suspicious of U.S. intelligence regarding the alleged invasion of Russia in the eastern Ukraine. Can you expound on that?
Well, I mean, we just questioned the... I mean, you see, the entire Ukrainian issue was created by... We were the ones who created the issue to begin with. I mean, if you recall, when the Soviet Union broke up, there was a verbal agreement with the Russian Federation that we would not move NATO further east, and the Ukraine then would agree to turn over their nuclear weapons for Russia to manage, the Russian Federation. And with that agreement, we agreed not to move NATO further east. And then once they transferred the weapons later on, that's exactly what we did. We moved it into Poland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, you know. And then we're trying to get Ukraine into... And in the meantime, the Ukrainians elected a pro-Russian president. Well, we didn't like that. So Hillary Clinton, under her administration, they kept saying things like, Yats is our guy. And we promoted regime change in Ukraine and got Yats, you know. And so then we tried to move the NATO into the Ukraine. And here's Russia sitting here violating this thing, you know. And by the way, our Black Sea Fleet headquarters, the major facility in the Black Sea for their Russian fleet, is in Sevastopol in Crimea, you know. So imagine if we had to turn over a major NATO facility to the Russians. Think about it that way, you know. How would you feel about that? And then most of the people in the Ukraine were Russian anyway, and so. When they had a general vote, I think 85% of them or something voted to be part of Russia and not the Ukraine.
Well, we
couldn't. So, I mean, it was clear that they weren't going to give up the Black Sea Fleet headquarters in Sevastopol. And, you know, then there was a large population of Russians in the eastern part of the Ukraine. So there's all these issues that were created that if we didn't try to move NATO, I mean, if we were going to move NATO into Ukraine, why didn't we invite in Russia into the NATO? And then we'd be inclusive and not exclusive, and then everything would have been fine. But no, when we create these frictions and these problems between states trying to create an enemy, the Russian Federation is our enemy, right? So that way we have an external enemy. That way we can justify all this spending on military equipment and training and all this. So, you know, I just see that we are culpable in this, believe me.
Well, I'm watching this, and you're exactly right. Uncle Joe Stalin once said that you keep your friends close, but you keep your enemies closer. What better way to have an inside track and be able to watch Russia, maybe from the inside, to bring them into NATO? Donald Trump suggested that we just do away with NATO. This is post-World War II that we really don't need anymore.
Yeah. I mean, when you don't bring them in, you're treating them like an adversary and creating an organization that points at them, making it look like they're an adversary.
Well,
but if you were inclusive and brought them in, you know, they're a part of it. You know, say, we're being inclusive now, not exclusive.
Well, and Harley, you you recently brought up, and I think we posted your latest story here, about China, Russia, India, financial cooperation. There are those that do not want to see financial cooperation with these countries. What a good way to forestall any, how should I say, aspirations for war. There's more to be gained dealing with countries economically so both sides benefit.
Yeah. Well, when you ask the question of what is it that the military-industrial complex wants, what do they oppose? They want to keep the financial system that we have in place, which benefits these 1% of the wealthiest people, the speculators, the people involved in arms traffic and arms development. But that's a system that's collapsing. It's overwhelmed with unsustainable debt. You have bankers, the central banks of most countries, the so-called Federal Reserve, the private banking agency that controls the U.S. economy, the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank. These are bankrupt institutions. And what the Chinese and the Russians and others are saying is, let's build a new world. Let's build infrastructure. Let's work together for peaceful economic development. And that means that this elite that's had its way, that controls the intelligence community, that controls the banking system, would be lost. They're not going to accept that without a fight. And that's why you ask, what can Trump do? He's got a meeting coming up at the end of this week in Osaka, Japan, of the G20, where he said he will meet with Xi Jinping. He'll probably meet with Putin. They have a proposal for the United States to join them in infrastructure development of South Asia, of the Middle East, of Africa, and South America. And the Chinese are also saying they would be interested in helping rebuild infrastructure in the United States and letting American companies participate in the Belt and Road Initiative. That's something that Trump has been toying with. He seems interested in it. But again, that would break the old geopolitical confrontations that these networks require. So there is a way to break out of this. On the one side, expose Russiagate for what it was, a complete fraud aimed at keeping the old system in place, and then move into a new system which doesn't depend on oil and dollars, but depends on investment in physical infrastructure and production. And well, that's the solution.
And Bill, I look at this situation. In any war, you need supply, you need intelligence, you need the boots on the ground. There's many elements that go in for war to take place. But I look at the central point of this, what is funding this. Now, we're doing this all on credit. I don't know how many hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars were in the hole. We like to say there were $21 trillion in the hole. But I've spoken to Ron Paul, and he goes, no, the debts and the obligations past, present, and future of the United States government, John, it's well over $200 trillion. Yeah. If I wanted to cut the party boys off, I do something to their punch, or I just cut them off. And we've been dealing with this credit situation from the bankers, which in my humble opinion, Bill, is the true deep state of this planet, who's controlling governments. Harley, you said the United States government. Well, we saw the exercise in 2008 where it infected the whole planet.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are our fiat money gangsters, the bankster gangsters, and they would not be able to do what they're doing right now, Bill, if they didn't have the credit line in which to pull this off.
Well, also, if you recall, Elliot Spitzer was going to go after them criminally, and they had to get rid of him. So in order to do that, they needed to lean on the people they funded that had the power to do that. That meant FBI and the NSA and the data they had. be able to get investigate, go in and look at that data, find something on Elliot Spitzer to get rid of him.
Yeah, and Elliot's been persona non grata for how long now?
Yeah.
Just roll in the $5,000 hooker, blow him up, and get rid of him. Well, this is, you know, Bill and Harley, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I've been watching this grand chessboard, if you will, for a lot of years. And where we're sitting right now, it's tenuous, it's uncertain.
Yeah.
There is much fear out there, and we're starting to recognize and see who the bad guys really are. And why this is continuing to go on, I would like to think, Bill, that we've got more people within the FBI or the CIA that are not compromised, that actually believe that they're there to protect and defend the country by way of the Constitution and the way it's been formed. The only way I see the United States even turning and coming back to that republic status is for people within these agencies, when it starts to break loose, and it will break hard and fast, for these people to come forth and be an aid to the restoration of this republic.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. I think at the lower levels of working levels of people in these agencies, the most of them are, the vast majority are with them and want to defend and people in the country and protect them best they can. The laws and follow the laws of the country. So the problem is in these agencies, there's a cloning process. I call it a cloning process, you know. About the grade level 15, it starts, you know, GS-15. And from there on up into super grades, you get cloned into the methodology of the existing structure. In other words, you get conditioned to act like the existing structure expects you to act. And even if it involves you know, breaking the law, well, that doesn't matter because all of them do that. So it must be the standard. So we're all right by breaking the law.
And
that's the real problem.
The friendly guidance, the tour. Let me show you how things are done, how they're really done.
Yep.
Well, I'm rather fascinated by this. I'm. By the way, I wanted to ask you. This is a little off point here, but where were you born in Pennsylvania?
I was born in Dubois, which is about 12 miles northeast of Punxsutawney. It's central western Pennsylvania.
I was born in Greensburg, outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
There's been some pretty good people coming out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, it's good country up there, you know. Yeah. Good people, small town. Everybody knows everybody, you know.
The way you're describing the trusted people had, and some now call it a blind trust in our fellow American, and we weren't fearful or paranoid that they weren't going to shoot us or rob us or anything else. There was a certain, there was a certain bit of sanguinity, I guess you could call it, in the United States. And now a country divided, people are fearful, they're suspicious. This country is heading in the entire wrong direction. And when I said that... you know, we're going to need some help here pretty soon. I'm hoping that the boys in blue out there, the badged ones, whether they be county sheriff or police or military or NSA or FBI or CIA, hopefully we got enough good people left that they're really going to, they'll be able to recognize what's happening to this country. And when it starts to fall apart, they're not trying to shoot and jail the wrong guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems to be a major problem here. All right. Yeah. Bill, I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully you can return.
Glad to.
I would greatly appreciate it. And Harley, thank you for arranging this. I appreciate it very much. It's 2 o'clock in the morning in Germany, and it's 8 o'clock.
I'm going to sleep.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Bill Binney, thank you so much. I appreciate it, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.